Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Integrity in each of the services is also critical to a strong military. General Amos, I have become friends with Major James Wyrick, United States Marine Corps, who I sincerely believe is a man of integrity. Did you fear Major Wyrick at any point?
My name is James Wyrick. And this is Military Justice, my podcast about the system of justice that governs those who protect our nation.
General Frank Kearney could not wait to blast Fox Company and could not give Fox Company the opportunity to have any type of background investigation of the situation, what was right, what was wrong.
Looks and the jokes and the, you know, people turning away and treating you like lepers. That's something that our Marines still face, just because our side of the story, the full, complete story, is not out.
Our government evidently turns a deaf ear to the boys who've been falsely accused, as my son was.
You know, the individual Marine that was involved in this case is probably thinking, all these officers have betrayed me. Not just Army officers, not just Air Force officers, doggone Marine officers.
Welcome back. This is the fourth episode of a multi-episode series. So if you're one of those people that doesn't want to come into the middle of a series, you might want to pause this episode. Then go back and listen to episode 015 of Military Justice. That's the first episode in this series. In this series, we're covering the treatment or mistreatment of Major Fred Galvin and his fellow MARSOC Marines when they were kicked out of Afghanistan in 2007, and then their ensuing trial by the Marine Corps. In this episode, we have something really exceptional or special. This isn't something you usually get. This interview I did is with Lieutenant Colonel Steve Morgan, USMC retired. Lieutenant Colonel Morgan was a member of the Court of Inquiry that was charged with investigating the action of Major Galvin and his Marines. This is truly a unique opportunity. You almost never get to have the point of view of a juror when looking at a case. But that's just what we have today. So to just orient you to a little bit about the underlying military justice issue going on here, the commanding officer in Major Galvin's case ordered what is known as a court of inquiry. It's somewhere between an administrative board and an actual court. It's composed of, well, actually, let me go just right here to Article 135 of the UCMJ. Quote, courts of inquiry to investigate any matter may be convened by any person authorized to convene a general court-martial or by any person designated by the secretary concerned for that purpose, whether or not the person involved have requested such an inquiry. A court of inquiry consists of three or more commissioned officers For each court of inquiry, the convening authority shall also appoint counsel for the court. Courts of inquiry shall make findings of fact, but may not express opinions or make recommendations unless required to do so by the convening authority. Each court of inquiry shall keep a record of its proceedings, which shall be authenticated by the signatures of the president and counsel for the court and forwarded to the convening authority. So to explain that, a court of inquiry is not quite a criminal court, and it's not quite an administrative court. It's more of an investigative body, maybe akin to a medical board. And as stated in Article 135, it's composed by three commissioned officers. In Major Galvin's case, that was a colonel and I believe two lieutenant colonels, including Lieutenant Colonel Steve Morgan. They're also assisted by a counsel for the court. That's usually a senior military judge advocate, a judge advocate in the case of the Marine Corps, the other services, JAGs. In this case, there was a colonel assigned to the case. That means that colonel assists the members, assists the three officers in making determinations, can also rule on evidence and make recommendations on how the board should be conducted. And that's also a resource for the members of the board to ask legal questions. And finally, the board makes findings, so they produce a written report. And that's forwarded back to the convening authority concerning the findings that that board made. I believe in this case, there were about 20 witnesses. It took about 3 weeks to conduct the court of inquiry and another 2 weeks to get the report done. And then that's forwarded back to the convening authority to answer all the questions he or she has posed to the court of inquiry. So that's enough discussion. Now, please enjoy the fascinating interview with Lieutenant Colonel Morgan. Today, we are joined by Lieutenant Colonel Steve Morgan, a retired Marine who was part of the special court that looked into the case involving Major Fred Galvin. Thank you, Colonel, for being here today.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me, James.
Can you give us a little background on your career in the Marine Corps?
Yeah, I come from a Marine family. Two brothers, two uncles, father. My former wife is a Marine. So I've been around the Marine Corps all my life. Came in the Marine Corps in 77, got my commission in 80, started out as a field artillery officer, collected several MOSs along the way, had two combat tours, ended up as an intelligence officer, and retired in 2008.
Where were you based when you were selected to serve on the board to look into Major Galvin and his Marines' conduct in Afghanistan?
I was serving as a deputy intelligence officer at Marine Forces Command in Norfolk, Virginia. When the letter from General Mattis came, I was about 6 months away from retirement. So that was in late 2007. And the court of inquiry convened in January of 2008.
Oh, so you had already planned on your retirement at that point?
Yeah. I don't think that had any play or not play in the, in my selection. It's just how it worked out.
Yeah, it happened to go that way. Tell me about your time on the board, if you would.
Well, let's see. General Mattis decided to convene the board probably late summer, early fall of 2007. And as you know, the incident that we were looking at took place in March of 2007. And then we had the holidays intervene and a couple of other things, and a commandant had to approve it. So it had to go up from Florida at Marine Corps Forces Central Command up to the commandant, back down. And then they had to find people that were qualified to sit on the board. And so out of that qualification pool, I think that it was Major Galvin's legal team and Captain Noble's legal team. You're a lawyer, so you could probably tell me better, but they had to say, okay, these guys are okay.
Yes.
So I was one of the people that they picked that, had the qualifications to sit on the board. I was the junior member. There were two colonels and myself, a lieutenant colonel, and we had a Marine Corps colonel, staff judge advocate, acted as our legal advisor. And the court convened, and then the court proceedings lasted about 3 weeks during January, and then the members of the court stayed back and wrote the report. I think we took about maybe about a week to 10 days until we got that report all written. So it's been about 5 weeks.
So take me back to when you first got the notification that you were going to be selected for this court. Had you heard much about the incident before then?
Oh, my word, yes. Because that was, you know, first of all, it was the first MARSOC deployment, and I had a special interest, but a professional interest. But I'd always been interested in special operations. So for me personally, I was following everything that was going on with MARSOC. So I was very well familiar with that incident that took place from the point of view of what was in the news. I didn't know Fred. I didn't know his Marines, Fred being Major Galvin.
Right.
I didn't know the personalities at all, but I was definitely very familiar with the incident, and somewhat taken aback when, you know, I got the call from the command deck that, hey, you are a potential board member to sit on this court of inquiry. So, yeah, I was as familiar as you can be without reading a bunch of classified reports, etc.
Military Justice is brought to you in part by the good people of Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Blue Apron achieves this by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standard for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Cooking together builds strong family bonds. Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often. Those who spend a lot at a restaurant or high-end grocery chains can now spend under $10 per person for a delicious meal. Among the upcoming meals at Blue Apron are beef teriyaki stir fry with sugar snap peas and lime rice, baked spinach and egg flatbread with sauteed asparagus and lemon aioli, crispy salmon and roasted potato salad with pickled mustard seeds and creme fraiche sauce. Blue Apron has really changed the way I cook. I was maybe a decent cook before this, but there are many things that I'd never tried. I would never try an aioli or creme fraiche. I just didn't even know how to use those ingredients. Blue Apron makes it simple for even me to use new ingredients, prepare new dishes that I would have never tried before, and it makes it fun. They come with all the ingredients you need to prepare the meal. I've never had anything other than fresh ingredients when they've arrived. I've always been satisfied with that. It comes with a large recipe that has step-by-step directions, including color photographs. It just makes it really easy to create great meals at home. And I promise you that if you try Blue Apron, you will be thoroughly satisfied. So go and check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free, including free shipping, by going to blueapron.com/military. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/military. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. You following Special Forces, that's probably a good thing that we should talk about now, because I'm not sure if the listener fully understands the contentious relationship or interesting relationship that the Marine Corps historically has had with the Special Forces community. Because when it first, in at least its modern form, formed in the late 70s, we had always decided, we, the Marine Corps, had always decided to stay out of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, you go back to days of old, you know, we did a lot of stuff, the Marine Corps did, on the peripheral of big special operations. We didn't do a lot, but there's a lot of history about you would have minor individuals, you know, maybe two or three people assigned to, in Vietnam, for example, assigned to MACV or, you know, seconded out to the CIA, these kinds of things. So that was kind of real secret school stuff. And then you had the rich history of the Marine Corps reconnaissance community in Vietnam. And then so you kind of fast forward up to the days of, I guess, the, you know, during the Reagan era. And it really didn't come, you know, we didn't start with the Marine Corps, the special operations capable stuff until Al Gray became commandant. I mean, it was always a peripheral thing, et cetera. But he kind of pushed that, I think, just to have a play and just to be able to say that we had something on ships, some way to respond to some oddball crisis out there. But my sense of it is that wasn't some big push to get a particular slice of the special operations budgetary pie.
So where the Navy, they gave over a lot of their SEALs to be operators in the special forces community, we did not give that same sort of emphasis to relinquish our Marines over to that community.
No, we didn't. And we always had, you know, outliers is probably the wrong word to use, but we've always had something like, say, a liaison officer from the Marine Corps to the Special Forces guys over at Fort Bragg. We've had, I think, it wasn't too long after the inception of what's known as Delta, you know, where we had guys from the Marine Corps that were assigned to Delta, but they were in a support role, intel, logistics, that kind of thing, and it was more liaison guys. It was more just a few officers and maybe the odd very senior enlisted, you know, at the master gunnery sergeant level kind of thing. And it really wasn't until after 9/11, but it really wasn't, James. It was before that, probably around the summertime. I think part of your question was, how did we get to where we are now? And there was always a resistance in the Marine Corps because we think we are, and we are special, but we just didn't want to get into that special operations command kind of community because it was looked upon as being a loss of people and gear and who's going to pay for it and all of that. I'll be honest with you, especially, you know, being a Marine, I think most of your listeners are probably familiar with the military, but we've always looked at the commandant of the Marine Corps as being kind of a god.
Right.
You know, what the commandant says do, we do. But I was at headquarters Marine Corps in 2000, early days, so when Mr. Rumsfeld said, if the Marine Corps get on board. Well, General Jones was on board with it too. And I know because I was there and I knew he was on board. But I'll never forget being in a conference room with PPNO, which is the Directorate of Operations for the Marine Corps. It's a 3-star billet. Sitting in a room of representatives from representing all communities, logistics, aviation, intel, all the rest, sitting in a secure conference room up in the old Navy annex and listening to a lieutenant general, a general with 3 stars. I can't give you the exact quote, but it was, if I would paraphrase it, it would be along the line, hey, boys and girls, we got to find a way to convince the commandant to do otherwise because we don't want to do this. And so the Marine Corps at the very highest levels, first of all, you know, I said earlier, I grew up in the Marine Corps, where here I am in a room full of very senior officers. There were probably, if you added up all the stars, 20 stars in that room, colonels and sergeants major. They were defying the commandant of the Marine Corps. That's what the word in the room was, because they didn't want to give up the bodies. They didn't want to give up equipment. They didn't want to give up facilities. And they were worried about how much money it was going to cost. So you had a resistance from the very beginning against standing up a Marine Corps Special Operations Command. That, I think, that resistance permeated down through the whole Marine Corps, and it was still there pretty much well after this incident in Afghanistan with Fred and his Marines happened. So where we are now, we bought into it, and MARSOC is the world-class organization that we always knew that it could be. But man, I tell you, you talk about some teething issues. It took a long time for us to grow a full set of teeth on those guys from Warsaw. It highly impacted on how the Marine Corps approached supporting the first deployment of MARSOC Marines. It made a major negative impact. And you can actually read about that in the report, in our opinions.
And I think that sometimes the listeners might not fully understand this, but I had a similar incident, but on a much lesser scale, when I was selected to go over and prosecute in Guantanamo Bay. And it wasn't that that the judge advocate community was against it, but they definitely aren't happy with it because we're just losing personnel. So I think the Marine Corps, to a certain extent, looked at MARSOC as the same way, and that we're losing funding and personnel that's going over to an entity that's outside of us.
Absolutely. And, from a corporate point of view, it's very disappointing.
Right. And I've always got the impression from this case that, if you would have had, instead of the Major Galvin and his Marines getting kicked out, if you would have had the equivalent SEAL team getting kicked out, that you would have had a much stronger show of support from, the various admirals, where Fred didn't get that type of support from our generals.
That's a double-edged sword, too, that you're talking about there, because, first of all, that was the very first one.
Right.
But the other thing is that the Marine Corps was resistant to the whole idea. Had the Marine Corps bought into it, I don't think that it would have been nearly as bad. There would have been more flexibility in, what are we going to do? You know how we are. We're very let the guy on the ground decide whatever centric,
right.
In this case, the guy on the ground was saying, I want these Marines out of the country. And we were taking the advice of the guys on the ground. But we also didn't have enough seasoning to do the right kind of pushback and say, hey, now, wait a minute. What's going on? Why are you so quick to make this happen? So, I think if there would have been more history and more buy-in, things would have been different.
Okay, so let's go back to the beginning of the court. What were your thoughts going into this?
So, I said earlier that I knew as much as I could I wasn't reading classified stuff about it. I wasn't. Because of my clearance and my position, I could have gone and looked at it, but it wasn't right, and it was just I was too busy to be a voyeur,
Right, and there was plenty in the early bird every day. I mean, this was reported on in the media a bunch.
Yeah, oh yeah. Once I found out that I was going to be a member of the board, I got 3 file boxes of unclassified read-ahead. And, there was some pretty interesting reading. And so I had that, and I was walking in the courtroom, and I've been quoted this, from what I read and what I understood when I sat down in the courtroom, I thought these guys were, a bunch of hot dog cowboys, everything they had been portrayed to be. And then what I saw in the read-aheads were some things, that I can't go into simply because it would be, it's a privacy issue.
Right, about the individual.
There that was just, what the hell? But I began to change my mind very early on once I got to read some of the classified stuff and once we started taking witnesses and, once we began to have, between myself and the other board members, some 3-way conversations about some of the stuff that we were just seeing because it was classified. We got down there to North Carolina, and things were beginning to take a very, very different turn. And that's another thing. I think the Court of Inquiry was a great idea from General Mattis's point of view, because what you had, the 3 of us, we had 90-plus years between the 3 of us.
Wow.
Of experience in the Marine Corps. And so myself and the 2 counterparts, you know what it's like, just as you know how the Marine Corps is, officers get assigned investigations. So we, probably between the 3 of us, we had done maybe 25, 30, 40 investigations. That would not be unusual.
Oh, right,
over
right.
Over a 30-year career for an officer to be assigned 8 or 10 investigations. And so we had all this experience, and so we could look at these documents and these classified statements and the questions that were being asked by the investigators on the ground and all this other stuff. And I'll be honest with you. Some of these things, we sit around, you know, we say, what the hell kind of question was that? And why didn't he ask this question? Or why didn't, you know, why didn't she do this? Or why would, it was pretty amazing the level of incompetence that some of these investigations took when you saw that, that they weren't asking the questions that needed to be asked. And then at some point in the, I don't know how far ahead I'm getting here on you, but at some point you just kind of realized some of these people that were doing the investigations were doing it to get a certain a predetermined outcome as
right.
opposed to finding out what the damn truth was. They had a predetermined agenda. They wanted a predetermined outcome, and that's the way they went.
How many, I don't need an exact number, but about how many witnesses did you hear from with live testimony?
Oh, man, let me think.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to. I don't want to put you on the spot Andy, 10 years later on a Sunday.
Andy de Grandpre, if you go back and read his articles, and I still think that no matter what comes of this, is that Andy de Grandpre's series is going to be the source document for this incident, and everything will go from there.
Right.
So, but the exact number is in Andy's article, but I think somewhere in the 30s. We took a lot of witness testimony, either on the stand or by video, VTC, video teleconference. A lot of people. We had subject matter experts. Actually, the only two witnesses that we didn't take direct testimony from that we really wanted to talk to was General Carney, who it's probably not factual to say that he absolutely refused to testify. But we didn't get anything from him and General Halick. But what we did get from him was written questions and answers.
So
we talked to.
When did you start to feel differently? Was there any particular witness that kind of started to sway you?
You know, I really can't say exactly what witness it was, but there was one witness, a Marine. I don't think he was a staff sergeant. I think he was a sergeant, but a real country boy.
Right.
And you know, we asked him if he had a lawyer and this and that. And, you know, his response was, well, I don't need a lawyer, sir. And he sat there, and it just struck me that this kid may have been the smartest one of all, you know, because a lot of those kids lawyered up. And
right.
when I say kids, I mean these young enlisted Marines. And you sat there, and you listened to his testimony, and you go back to these other statements that we had read in advance, and you take it in full, and you're just thinking to yourself, nah, you couldn't get this many Marines to stick to this same damn story. So it was this one kid, I can't remember his name, and it was probably on the second or third day of testimony. Well, I don't need a lawyer, sir. And it was just so honest in what he was saying, and it just, everything that he said fit. When you have a statement from a bunch of Marines, there's all this stuff that's different. But there were all these things that sort of fit right into place. And this guy's testimony just seemed to me like there's no way that these guys could have done bad things that they were alleged to do, killing a bunch of people, like it was said that they had done. So I think that's when my first real, it just began to dawn on me that things were not nearly as bad as what they had been portrayed. And then as we went further down the road, and we got into more detail, and we talked to some senior officers who were involved in it. You know, it just looked like a shitstorm. I don't know if I'm allowed to use such terrible language.
You're allowed to express yourself however you need.
Yeah. It just looked like a shitstorm of integrity breaches by officers. And when I say that, I mean officers of all branches, not just, you know, people wanted, a lot of times, one of the problems with this case that's always annoyed me is that people have wanted to describe it as the Marine Corps against the Army kind of thing. That's not where it is at all. What it is a bunch of officers who compromised their integrity to get the end result that they wanted. So, you know, we got downrange a little further with witness testimony, and we'd be talking to these subject matter experts, and we'd be talking to these investigating officers or officers that were on the ground in the chain of command that made the decision to relieve Fred and move these guys out of the country. And it just, when you put all the pieces together, you think to yourself, you know, these guys are corrupt and they didn't want the Marines around. This was their goal, was to be rid of the Marine Special Operations guys. And sorry to say, you know, there was one Marine officer in particular, you just got the sense from his testimony that he just thought that MARSOC was a bad idea. He thought Fred was a piece of shit. He thought Fred's Marines were pieces of shit. And so I'm specifically talking about a Marine officer. But then you also had officer from the Air Force, colonel who was an investigating officer that really compromised his integrity. Then you had, a couple of Army colonels that, the one specifically that compromised his integrity. And they just, you know, they really weren't on the ball as officers in doing what they were supposed to be doing. So there was a lot of just, you know, I think deceit. There was a lot of dislike for MARSOC, not for the Marine Corps, but the idea of MARSOC. And so they were quick to jump the gun. And then, you know, I think a couple of the officers who were in country, my personal opinion is that they had been there too long and they were burnt out and were not fully engaged in making the proper kind of decisions that they needed to make.
Military Justice is brought to you in part by the good people of Harry's. For decades, one big razor company has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of you, the customer. So Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who were fed up with getting ripped off, started Harry's to fix that situation. Harry's knew that there were only one way to ensure quality, so they bought their own blade factory. By taking less profit and selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's offers their blades at half the price. Just $2 a blade compared to four or more at the drugstore. Harry's is so confident that you will love their blades, they're giving you their trial set for free. Just cover $3 for shipping. Your free trial set includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision engineered blades with lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. That's a $13 value for you to try free. And I'm just going to say, I really like Harry's razors. The razors are good as any other razor I've ever used. But I'll tell you, the best part of this entire deal is that the blades are shipped to you at home. There's nothing more annoying. There may be other things, but this is a very annoying thing, having to go to the drugstore or supermarket and buy shaving blades. They're always behind a lock counter. You have to go find somebody to unlock it. It is a pain. Harry's removes all of that. You get good, quality, usable blades delivered directly to you at home. So, stop messing around and get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your free trial offer. That's a $13 value, and all you have to do is cover shipping. To get your free trial set, including razor handle, 5-blade cartridge, and shave gel, go to harrys.com/military. Go there right now and enter harrys.com/military. You'll be happy that you did it, and you will be supporting Military Justice. Thank you. One of the many important things that you said there, I think that for listeners that have never seen in court testimony, there is something, like you mentioned that young Marine and his honesty, there is something very important about live testimony, because people can write things down in reports and make allegations, but it's another thing to hear them in person. And I think that you probably experienced that during the court, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It makes all the world a difference because you see the body language. But body language is really important. And you can just tell. You can tell when someone's uncomfortable about a question they've been asked. Even on the VTC, that body language is helpful. I think it makes a world of difference. And like I said, you know, General Halleck, I wish he would have come down to the courtroom and testified in person. I've been familiar with General Halleck for going on 30 years. You know, I got such respect for that guy. I just wish that he would have come down. You're absolutely right. When I looked at his responses on paper, all you got was on paper. I just wish if he would have come down, I would have had I know that I would have had a better feel for what he was saying. Because a lot of times, and you're very careful when you put things down on paper so they can be like email.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, you make a very good point. The testimony where you can you watch the person, what they're doing, how they react to the questions, makes a great deal of difference.
And I'll tell you, I mean, I have, you know, mixed feelings about my Marine Corps career at times, but there is a simplicity and honesty of a young junior Marine that you just can't help but to love.
Well, yeah. You know, they're like puppy dogs.
Yeah, it's not calculated, and you just think, God, this young kid just wants to do his job and just wants to tell you, and like you said, I don't need a lawyer because I'm just here to tell you what I know.
Yeah. Well, that's another one of the things, too, a real sad part of this. I know that, you know, you're talking to Andy, and I listened to your interview with him a couple of weeks ago, but his big takeaway from this is the moral injury, you know, you suffer. And that, you look at the innocence of any kid in uniform. Doesn't have to be a Marine.
Right, right. Yeah, that's fair.
And the stuff that gets, you know, you get this stuff crammed down. You're always supposed to trust your officers. And with us, you've seen my quote in the Marine Corps. We are. We're like gods in its own way, you know.
Right.
It'd be like that anyway. And so that's what, you know, some of the stuff that Fred's Marines are dealing with is because they had that innocence. And it was taken away from them by the leadership that they were exposed to, both Marine Corps and the other services. Because, hey, James, you know how we are about officers. Our Marines make fun of everybody else except Marines, and they make fun of officers.
Right.
But you know an Air Force officer comes walking into the room, different kind of grooming standards, wear the uniform different than we do. They put their hands in their pockets. They chew gum. They do all those things. But the point is, the guy's an officer. That guy's going to get the same respect as an officer as a Marine would. The outward respect. I mean, you know,
right.
He's laughing at him. But he's going to get that outward respect. And that's what these Marines expect from officers of the other services. That's what they're taught. And what Fred's Marines got exposed to was a complete compromise of officer integrity, you know, and you listen to me, I'm a true believer, and I think up to this point, you know, and you know, up to this point, for what Fred has had to go through, you look at Fred, Fred's like a puppy dog, he's like a puppy dog Marine, you know, until this happened to him, he was this youthful, innocent, and then boom, you know, he's living, you know, like something out of a Kafka story. I mean, it's just crazy what happened to Fred and his Marines. And so they had their innocence shattered, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, right. No.
In a way I did too, but I think that was more for me because I was incensed at the outcome. And I don't know if this is the appropriate time to talk about it, maybe later on in the conversation. When you read the report, there are so many things in the report that, you know, should have opened up charges against the investigating officer or one of the investigating officers. I look at it this way. Colonel Pahana, the Air Force guy that did one of the investigations. I mean, there's been so many investigations, but there were so many flaws in that, and clearly the evidence is there. He should have been brought up on charges for obstruction, and I think if you read the report, we were clearly hinting at that. Colonel Nicholson, now General Nicholson, had he been a Marine and had this strictly been a Marine Corps affair, he was selected for general at the time the Court of Inquiry took place. Had he been a Marine, and you know how it works in the Marine Corps, he would not have seen that star. And so that's one of my big bits of outrage that I still carry with me personally about this whole court of inquiry, is there were people who did some really wrong things that I fully expected would have been brought up on charges or would have been reprimanded in some way, shape, and form. But the Air Force officer was, he wasn't promoted. He retired as a colonel, but he was promoted from his job into a command billet as a colonel. That's not a promotion in rank.
Right, right.
He went with General Nicholson. He's been promoted 4 times. And then you look at the Marines that were involved, and they've all had trouble with their career. Many of them have had trouble with their mental health. And I'll tell you, that right there, as far as I'm concerned, is on Mick Nicholson. The PTS kind of thing that these Marines have had to suffer for is on his hands. And when you read the report, you see that he didn't know what the hell was going on in his battle space. And we showed it to him in court, and he still didn't know. You know, just about a year later, he still didn't know what the hell was going on in his battle space that day. But his actions have done permanent damage to a group of young, innocent Marines, and they'll never get over that, no matter what happens. Because you know Fred's still fighting. No matter what happens there, James, those Marines will continue to suffer that wound to their soul. It's disgusting.
And I've spent time, obviously, during interviews and just other time with Fred, and I know exactly what you're talking about. It's just been a betrayal to his everything he believed in for so long. You know, he had been in the Marine Corps for probably 20 years at the time all of this started. And you can tell
go ahead.
Oh, no, that it just took away from him everything that he had worked so hard and believed so much in.
Absolutely. Fred gets criticism because he's so focused. That pisses me off, because Fred's focused on one thing, is mission accomplishment and bringing his kids home alive. Gee, many Christmas. That's what they teach us from the day we walk into OCS. And Fred defines it, and he's criticized. Well, Fred, blah, blah, blah. You know, you're too pushy about this, you're too that. Well, you know what? Fred wanted the best gear for his Marines. Fred wanted the best training for his Marines. Fred wanted the best ammunition for his Marines. He wanted this, he wanted that. He wasn't going to get anything if he didn't ask for it.
No, I could see Fred from the very beginning. If you went back to the basic school, I'm sure if you were in the basic school with Fred, he would be the type that on Friday, when everyone else wanted to leave, you know, go on Libo, that he would enjoy doing that second or third rifle count. Because that's just who he is. And he wants to, and we, the Marine Corps, fostered that and encouraged it until the moment it became inconvenient for us. And it seems like that's really the worst thing that you can do to a person.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing about Fred. Say what you want about him. Fred's got multiple combat deployments under his belt, and he's brought every one of his Marines home alive. I know some of them have been wounded, but that tells the story right there.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some other players in this ordeal that can't say that.
So what do you...
One of them is Nicholson.
Yeah, what feeling did you get about the motivations of General Nicholson?
He's all about himself. His motivation is self-preservation. Period. Period. Everything he does, and believe me, you know, I don't know if you've had a conversation with Fred about this, but, you know, I've probably gotten deeper into Nicholson's oodle loop than Fred has. Everything about Mick Nicholson is about Mick Nicholson. Period. End of story. He doesn't do anything if he's not sure it's to his calculated advantage. Nicholson has at least half of what he wants. He has 4 stars, and he wants to be chief of staff of the Army. That's been the word on the Army street for quite some time. So he has half of what he wants.
So this incident was almost, to a certain extent, a negative PR event for him that could possibly derail his overall dreams, and he was just going to offer up these Marines?
I don't think it had anything to do with... He would have offered up anybody if it appeared that they were going to stand in his way. If you read, there's a book, I think it's called The Wrong War by Carlotta Gall. I don't know if you're familiar with it. There's a quote in there, you know, it talks about him, and it talks about the incident with Marsak. And that book, now mind you, at this time, Nicholson, when that book was written, when the interview took place, was written, I think he had his second star, but he certainly had his first star. But this was after his testimony in the Court of Inquiry. And the book continued to forward the story and the myth about what happened out there. And Nicholson said, I almost didn't get promoted over this. So he said those words after he was exposed for being an incompetent field commander, for not knowing what was going on in his battle space. He was exposed in the courtroom in 2008, and this book, I think it had a copyright of 2011, 2012. But if you read in there about that, you know, he was more concerned there about his advancement than he was about correcting the story to Carlotta Dahl. Well, you know, Carlotta, that's not exactly what happened, you know. This is what happened, and there was nothing in there. And that would have been a perfect opportunity for him to redeem his honor, and he didn't. So all Mick Nicholson cares about is the advancement of his career. And if you look at his Wikipedia page, and if you look at his new wife, he has a new wife, by the way. If you look at her Wikipedia page, and actually his wife's Wikipedia page says, Wikipedia's put a notation in there.
Right.
Says it looks more like an advertisement than it does, you know,
right,
informational biography. So I have a dim view of General Nicholson. I think that he compromised his integrity on the witness stand. He is in this for himself, and you know, frankly, he's a disgrace. I mean, I've said it before in public, I'll say it again. He needs to man up, be a man, and acknowledge that what happened, I think it was March the 4th is the date, and there were two incidents, but second incident unrelated to the first, but he needs to man up about what happened out there and say he was wrong, and I didn't know what was going on in my battle space. And because I didn't know what was going on in my battle space, I blamed everything on Fred and his Marine. So, hey, General Nicholson, if your little press boys are listening, you need to man up, reinstate your integrity, and be a soldier. Be a man. And he's not. So far, you know, he's a moral coward, as far as I'm concerned.
So, and this is speculation also, so why do you think the Marine Corps is still hesitant to try to fix this story? And why are we having to go to, you know, Congressman Jones? Why are we having to go outside of our institution to get this story corrected?
Hey, you know what? I don't know. And they don't, big Marine Corps, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's the public affairs guys or if it's the SJA and the Marine Corps telling the commandant, don't touch it. Maybe it's both of them. I just don't get it, because all that can come from it is goodness. There can be no badness for the Marine Corps. And there can be no badness for General Nicholson to come out and say, hey, you know, I screwed up. Sorry about that. But that's, you know, I don't understand it. I really don't understand how hard it would be and how bad it would be for the Marine Corps image as a corporation, you know, for the commandant to acknowledge the fact that, you know, regarding this specific incident, March 4th, these Marines were exonerated. They still continue to be hounded by negativity. I'm the commandant of the Marine Corps. I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen of America, ladies and gentlemen of the world, all Marines everywhere, these Marines were exonerated of what happened. And don't think any less of them because they were involved in this, because the truth is they didn't do anything wrong. We did what we expected Marines to do. I don't know why. And I'll be honest with you, James, I guess it's 2 years ago now, right after Andy DeGrandpre's article, you know, I don't want to make this sound like strong language or too dramatic, but I'm going to say, you know, that I was warned off, you know, hey, Morgan, why do you continue to, you know, why does your name continue to pop up in these news articles with Galvin? And why does your name continue to, you know, what was going on there? The Marine Corps looked kind of favorably upon you, and now, you know, you're kind of screwing yourself over. I'm thinking to myself, what the hell are you talking about? Corporate Marine Corps is not important to me. Marines are important to me.
Right.
So, you know, I was warned off by some people in the inner circle that basically told me, hey, let this go, or you're not going to be welcome around the halls of Headquarters Marine Corps anymore. Which, that doesn't mean the physical spaces of Headquarters Marine Corps. What it means is, we're just going to kind of not bother with you anymore. We're not going to answer your telephone calls or your emails, and we're not going to invite you to cocktail parties when you're in town. Like, okay, great. That's how you're going to be. I don't want to fucking socialize with you anyway.
Hey, you can socialize with me. We can make our own cocktail party because I'm not invited to any of those either.
Yeah, I know a little bit about your history.
But I don't think, yeah, and I wish we could communicate to them that there's so much upside for those individual Marines, that acknowledgement that they were exonerated has such potential for just their own peace of mind.
Listen, James, let's go back to the moral injury. You have so much, every Marine has so much invested in the Commandant of the Marine Corps and their officer leadership. But now what you have is this thing where General Neller, and I think I met General Neller one time when he was a lieutenant colonel or something, shook his hands. So I don't know him. But you have the office itself of the Commandant. But you also have all the stuff we're taught about leadership. And then you start, you peel back the onion and General Neller's trying to prevent suicide, trying to reduce the effects of PTSD, trying to get these Marines to, you know, don't drink so much. Don't drink, don't drive, don't be a bad family man or woman, and all these things that they're trying, all of that stuff. Well, you know, and this goes back to practice what you preach. You know, Fred is guilty of practicing what the Marine Corps preached to him. But the leadership of the Marine Corps has an opportunity to embrace what they're preaching about taking care of Marines. Because Fred's kids abandoned on the battlefield, as far as I'm concerned. They are stung. They are deeply wounded by the leadership that didn't take care of them. Some of Fred's Marines, you know, personally, my opinion is that, you know, his kids that had to go through this ordeal, they're in danger of suicide, or they're in danger of bad things happening through substance abuse.
Yeah.
Because their lives have been crushed. Well, if you're gonna say these things, if you're gonna put these directives out, if you're gonna put out these white letters for the whole of the Marine Corps, what about Fred's Marines? What about those kids? And they're not doing anything. Headquarters Marine Corps could give a shit's less damn about Fred and his Marines. You've been to OCS or TBS. I we've all been, me and Fred, we've been to TBS. We know what it is. Blah, 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 blah. And now what's happened is, you know, they're breaking faith. They broke faith with Fred. They broke faith with his Marines. And, you know, frankly, I see them breaking faith with me because I know what the true story is about what happened out there in Afghanistan in 2007. You know, General Helen knows. The day I went on terminal leave, we outbriefed General Helen. The day I went on my last act in the Marine Corps as an active duty serving officer was to outbrief General Helen, who replaced General Mattis down at Marsden.
And again, I see it as being nothing but encouraging, you know, so
the acknowledgement in this case would give a wider message to all of the Marines that we are eventually going to always do right by you. We won't let an injustice stand.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what we're told, you know, from the first time we've ever, you know, been around Marines, that's what you're supposed to do. You're always supposed to do what's right, no matter what.
Well, Fred's not perfect, but he's damn close to living up to perfection when it comes to an officer's responsibility to his Marines. So at least Fred's Marines have that.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. And he brought him home all alive.
Well, and he continues to take care of him. You know, well, you do. You probably talk to Fred a lot. And I've talked to Fred a lot over these last, 9 years now.
Yeah, coming up on 10 years.
Fred is, I'm not going to say singularly focused because he's got a lot of irons in the fire. But he is primarily focused on taking care of those kids. It would embarrass him if I went into the full rich details, but he has gone way, way, way beyond what's expected of any officer to take care of his Marine.
No, I fully concur with that remains his focus, that those Marines, they're his Marines to this day, even though he's been retired for years. They remain, and which is, I mean, that's the essence of being a Marine, that you always owe them that. And he absolutely personifies that dedication to hit the Marines that he was entrusted with leading.
Yeah. So, at least he has that. I agree with Andy that there's a book in this somewhere, but I sure hope when the book is written that, Fred's true character as a Marine leader is revealed.
Yeah, that absolutely.
Right now, I think the Marine Corps, big Marine Corps, looks at Fred as a very annoying mosquito in a dark room at night.
Yes.
I mean, I don't want to make too much light of it, but, So, you've been through your travails, and I only know about you what I've... what I've read and had a couple of discussions with Andy DeGrandpre, but, you just wonder, what in the world is going on? It's just, the unreality of it all is amazing. I think the Marine Corps was happy that this story one of the reasons this didn't get as much, the Court of Inquiry didn't get the coverage in the press, was because of that tragedy where that young Marine was murdered down in Camp Lejeune, and they found the remains and everything.
The young female Marine.
Right at the time the court started. And so I think the Marine Corps, it's very cynical to say, but I think the Marine Corps was probably not unhappy that the story, shifted and focused elsewhere, because this is something they just wanted to go away. And to this day, it hasn't gone away. It's, they haven't gotten what they wanted. I don't know, had that focus not shifted to that murder investigation and had it stayed on the Court of Inquiry, then the story really would have gotten out and been reported. I don't want to say the way that it should have been, but the story would have been reported differently, and things may have come out in a more positive light for Fred and his Marines. But the story's never really been told. People still to this day don't really understand what's happened, because the Marine Corps doesn't want to play. Nicholson certainly doesn't want to play. And some of the other key players don't want to play. But you got Mark Coxton Jones for.
I was just going to mention that he is. Luckily, Fred and his Marines have on their side one of the more tenacious men I've ever met, and in Congressman Walter Jones.
Yeah, well, the Marine Corps, whether they want to admit it or not, they've got a hell of a friend in him. And you know how he fought for the Osprey families. When you think about that, I think the Marine Corps ended up, you know, coming out looking pretty good in the end.
Right.
It was painful to the Marine Corps, but at the end of the day, we, as a corporate entity, we came out looking pretty good.
Right.
So, you know, God bless Congressman Jones. I got all the time in the world for that guy.
Yeah, same here. He is a truly remarkable man.
Yeah. I've been in quite a few congressional offices. I got to tell you, I've never been in a congressional office where the staff was so happy and welcoming. I mean, I have never been in a congressional office like that. I mean, they weren't just professional. Every congressional office I've ever been in, everyone's been professional, but there's been some coldness or whatever. I think that it's his leadership, his personal style. Everybody's happy that's working with him or for him.
Oh, absolutely.
Have you noticed that when you've been around him?
Absolutely. I mean, he's an older gentleman, but he has boundless energy.
Yeah. And I believe him when he says, I am not letting this go.
Well, hopefully we can...
He needs to get a Bulldog Award.
Well, hopefully he can. We can keep helping him on this. Is there anything else you want to add that you want to make sure is known about this matter?
Well, yeah, I think Fred is at the regarding this. He is in the stage of forgiveness mode when it comes to General Nicholson.
Right.
And I'm not. And I think that General Nicholson is the worst. Kind of the worst that we have in any kind of federal service, whether it be in armed service or a civilian in the government. I know I sent you that email. Were you aware of how deep his political roots in Washington go?
No, tell us.
That thing that I sketched. So, you know, his father, West Point guy, retired Brigadier General, Vietnam, combat decorated. His uncle, same thing, West Point, Vietnam. They were both Rangers, combat decorated. So you have that. But now what you have to understand is, you know, this power structure. So Nicholson's father, Nicholson Sr., when he retires from the military, he ends up holding a series of important jobs. He was the secretary of the American Battlefield Commission. He also had another position with Veterans Affairs. His brother... Jim Nicholson, who I, you know, many of your listeners may remember, he retired from the Army as a reserve colonel. But Mick Nicholson Jr., his uncle, is the former chairman of the Republican National Committee. He's the former ambassador to the Vatican.
Wow.
He's the former secretary of Veterans Affairs. So, you got that. Now, there's another person that comes in here, a fellow named Claude Kicklighter. He's a retired lieutenant general. Now, Kicklighter used to have a position with that part of Veterans Affairs that Nicholson's father was in.
Right.
Nicholson's father used to work for Kicklighter. Kicklighter, later on, went over to the Veterans Affairs office itself and became the chief of staff for Nicholson's uncle, who was the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. So, Nicholson's father used to work for Kicklighter. Kicklighter used to work for Nicholson's uncle. Subsequent to Kicklighter working for Nicholson's uncle, he went over and became the Department of Defense Inspector General. He was the Inspector General. And he was the Department of Defense Inspector General who investigated Nicholson's actions and Kearney's actions as regards to the MARSOC affair. That investigation was instigated by Congressman Jones. So, am I being too conspiratorial by thinking something's up there? There's no way that any fault is going to be found with then-Colonel, now General Nicholson, the younger, you know, Junie. And so, now, me personally, I instigated a DODIG investigation on why wasn't General Nicholson and why wasn't Colonel Piana held responsible. when the DOD IG did my investigation, which I had to, I was gaffed off for about 9 months before I went to my congressman, before they did, you know, before the investigation was started. When the investigation came back, one of the questions I asked was, did the DOD IG use the report of the Court of Inquiry as a source document? That's kind of a paraphrase I'm using. And so that was a question I had, because I thought, you got to be kidding me. Nicholson, because the DOD, the first DOD IG came out after the Court of Inquiry had released its results. And after the Marine Corps had, you know, sent that news release out on Friday. So when that was investigated, they never went back and looked at our report from the Court of Inquiry. So that was one of the questions that I had on my DOD IG about why weren't people held responsible. But I specifically asked the question, did the first IG inquiry reference the Court of Inquiry? And the answer came back, no.
How could you possibly not?
You know, you're a lawyer, and there's, right. I mean, you know, you're doing these investigations, there's certain parameters. And we were told by Colonel Lecce, who was our advisor there, that you can't recommend any charges against Nicholson because that goes outside the parameters of our investigation. Well, the way we wrote it was that any thinking person would have looked at it and said, we need to investigate Nicholson and Tijana for being dishonest. Or at least in Nicholson's case, incompetent, and Tijana for being, none of that was done, James. None of that was done. And to this day, I'm just convinced in my own mind that, you know, Nicholson's gotten away with a lot of the stuff he's gotten away with because of his deep political connections in D.C. When you're dealing with somebody, when you have a blood relative who's the former chairman of the Republican National Committee and was the Secretary of Veterans Affairs at one point, and was the ambassador to the Vatican. Come on, you know.
Right.
And the guy that used to work for him is the guy that's investigating you. And that's another thing. You go back to Walter Jones. That guy's got 5-pound steel ball bearing cojones, as far as I'm concerned. He's a Republican, and basically he's sticking his finger in one of the most powerful Republicans in the country. And he knows. Walter Jones knows who. You know, what he's dealing with there. So, I mean, power is as power does, but Nicholson is why our country is in trouble the way it is in D.C. He's part of the reason. Guys like that get to where he is. So,
right, where everything is a calculation to determine what outcome is this going to have for my career. Not whether it's right or wrong, just what's the calculation. Oh.
Yeah, well...
Our Marines deserve better. All service members deserve better.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and it's just, you know, I don't want to get here on some, you know, overlong soliloquy about Nicholson than I already have. But the fact of the matter is, if you go out and research that guy, you know, Jake Tapper wrote a pretty good book about combat out in the Gorongal and some other places, you know, you read Jake Tapper's book and you read the discussion in there about Nicholson, and you read Carlotta Gall's book and you read the discussion in there about Nicholson and all these other places, these articles and all of this. He's his own public affairs machine. And you know how things are in the Marine Corps. A guy like that usually doesn't last because, you know, we don't like people like that in the Marine Corps. You know, they read about it in their fitness reports. Like, what are you doing? You know, where's your humility?
Right.
He's the kind of guy that walks into the chow hall and goes to the front of the line. So, and I guess that just about says it. About any Marines out there listening, they know exactly who I'm talking about.
Yes. You summed it up very well there.
Nicholson is. That's his character. You know, he's the kind of guy that it's his expectation that he'll be at the front of the line. And so, yeah. I mean, there's some more I can tell you. I'm going to shut up about Nicholson. There's a special place in the counterpart of Valhalla. Whatever it is, that's where he's going.
Well, I can't thank you enough for being on today and sharing this, because I really think that people need to know about this story. And we have a miscarriage of justice that needs to be rectified.
Yeah. Well, you know, I thank you for taking the time and, you know, for talking to me, because I'm glad to do it. I'll do what I can to help Fred, and God bless Fred Calvin and his Marines.
Military Justice is a production of Long Arc Digital Media. There are numerous people that need to be thanked for making Military Justice possible. First of all, audio. Those are the people that clean up all the mistakes I made. Hannah McCarthy, she takes care of that. Methil Talhan, she takes care of everything. She keeps the show moving along and keeps all of us on schedule. Executive producer is Dennis Robinson. You know him from Undisclosed and The Wearing of Underwear. And as always, Uber producer Dreadnought has my six.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.